Welcome to another episode of Extra Time, a weekly conversation with the national newspapers, sports writers, and editors on UAE and international sports. I'm Aaron Gray, a sports production journalist for the national newspaper and the national.ae. Today I have senior sports editor Graham Cagle with me, and we're going to discuss some Formula One news. Graham, thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And this week, we're going to be looking back and looking forward at the Formula One season. Obviously, last week, the Japanese Grand Prix was on Sunday, and it ended on a somber note. Jules Bianchi suffered a violent crash late into the race and required head surgery. He is now in critical but stable condition. Graham, what was your first reaction when you saw footage of the accident?
I think like pretty much everyone across the world, it was like a sort of dark sinking feeling, really, because no one really knew instantly what had happened, because Adrian Sutil had crashed at that before at that turn in a Sauber, and they began to get a roadside recovery. It was a digger, in this case, to come out and pull the car in. The double yellow flags were out, but then they actually put the safety car out a lap afterwards, which seemed a little bit strange, and then the medical car went out as well, and then it was clear something had gone on, but you couldn't see clearly on the TV. And for reasons that have become abundantly clear since, the FIA chose not to put the replay out there of him hitting the digger, which is what happened. Bianchi lost control. Conditions were getting very difficult at Suzuka. It started in the wet. It dried out a little bit. They'd never, ever been off wet tyres during the race. They'd been on intermediates at one point, but rain had returned. It was getting very, very difficult. And so in that respect, he lost control of his car and hit the digger that was recovering Sutil's car, and as you said, suffered severe head injuries. And I think the angle he hit it at, having seen a YouTube footage of it, it's a very bizarre thing to say, but it could have been a lot worse. I think a lot of people feared it was going to be a fatality on the spot, and it's a credit to the strength of the cars, really, and a large dollop of lady luck that it wasn't a fatality on the spot, and that Jules still has a chance to pull through here.
Jules is in the hospital recovering, but the news coming out of the hospital has been kind of gloomy, that it's critical but stable, and that's pretty much most of the news this week. Now that we've had a week, and it's been a week since the incident, Graham, do you know, is there someone that's at fault here? Do you believe F1 did everything they could?
I think at this point, it's difficult to really sort of gauge what happened. I think they will make changes to their procedures, which may be taken by some as sort of element of fault. There were certain things they could have done different in hindsight. They knew this bad weather was coming at Suzuka. They knew it was going to be a wet race in the afternoon, and it could have been the typhoon in the region. Personally, I think they, for the wrong reasons, they chose not to move it to a morning slot, which would have given them a better chance of having the race in better conditions, and B, they would have finished it at a better time, because one problem they had was the race started at 3 p.m. local time, and it gets dark in Japan about 5:30, 6 p.m. So they were racing its darkness, and two of the drivers, Sutil and Felipe Massa, complained about the fact it was getting a bit difficult to see towards the end. So I do think they're going to have to rethink this obsession with, in Asian races and sort of like races outside of Europe, trying to move the start times to suit European audiences. If you're in Asia, or in North America, you've got to sort of work around where you are rather than worrying about the European audience. If your European audience and the TV audience is what matters most, have the race, just have races in Europe. If you're going to have the race in Japan, you should have it at the time that best suits the Japanese, putting on the best show possible. That didn't happen on Sunday, so I think that's something that needs rethinking. With regards to safety, I think the big element that will probably come out of this was the main criticism is why the safety car didn't come out immediately after Sutil hit the barriers, because it was obvious the car was going to need moving by some kind of outside force in the recovery vehicle. And I think, obviously, now it can be seen as a mistake in hindsight. They didn't go behind the safety car straight away, because at a slower speed, it's very unlikely Jules would have lost control and hit the digger in that way. And I think that's something maybe possibly from this weekend, or possibly brought in more fully for next season once they've got a better idea of what happened in Japan. It will be that any time if a car goes off or crashes, or a roadside vehicle or a marshal has to enter the track, they'll go to a safety car. That might mean obviously more safety car periods during the season and breaking up races and the flow, but at the end of the day, it's safety. It has to be safety first, because as every single ticket in motorsport ever says, like for every person who's picked up a ticket for the Etihad Airways Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, we'll see on the back of it says motor racing is dangerous. It always will be, but you can do away with some of the risk.
If you can, talk a little bit more about Jules, the driver. I know he scored his first points this season and his first points for his racing team, so it looks like a promising career was just starting to heat up here this season, and then this unfortunate incident. So talk a little bit more about his career to this date.
It's a huge tragedy in many ways, because he was seen as one of the young and up-and-comers in the sport. I had the pleasure of having a few minutes conversation with him when he was a GP2 driver competing at Yas Marina. He was very grounded. It was actually very refreshing, because a lot of the drivers are very, very protected by agents and such. And, you know, they won't talk about having a press officer next to him. Mm-hmm. He actually waved his press officer away and was more than happy to speak to me and my colleague at the time for about 10, 15 minutes and talk very freely about what life as a Formula One driver is like. He was part of Ferrari's Young Driver Academy. It was like seen as a future star. And I think he was almost certainly, it might not have happened next season that he would have been at Ferrari. I've seen, especially with Sebastian Vettel having been named there. But I do think there was expectations he was going to be at Ferrari in 2016, because he's done the best he can with Marussia. As you said, they're a back end of the grid team. They've got limited finance. In many ways, the fact they compete as well they do and the budget they've got compared to the likes of Mercedes, Ferrari and co. is a fantastic achievement. And as you said, he scored his first points and the team's first points in Monte Carlo when he finished. He was actually eighth on the road but ended up ninth due to a penalty. But to actually score points at all was a fantastic achievement, and it was clear that he deserved much better machinery than what he had. And obviously, we don't know yet if he's going to make it through this, and B, what kind of levels of recovery. But if he doesn't ever step foot in a Formula One car again, a great talent has been lost from the sport.
There hasn't been a fatality in F1 in almost 20 years. So if Jules unfortunately does succumb to his injuries, do you think that'll spark changes in the sport?
I think, as I said, with the safety car, they will have to sort of have a big rethink on like how that works and the circumstances of how roadside vehicles or recovery vehicles go to the side of the track, because there have been other deaths in terms of sort of obviously in other sports, and there's been a couple of martial deaths as well in Formula One. So there's always a risk, and you never quite know. And in this element, there was the fluke element of it. Like if Jules had gone off slightly or gone off at a slightly different angle or slid, you know, another way, he would have missed it and he would have been a big scare. 20 years ago at this race, Martin Brundle, who's now a TV commentator who the UAE audience is here doing the English broadcast, had a very similar accident, and he's spoken quite frankly about it this week, and he missed a digger by fractions, and it could very easily be a fatality because the cars were not as safe as they are now when he was driving. And he actually hit a marshal, and by miracle of all miracles, the marshal didn't die. The marshal actually suffered a broken leg out of it. Wow. So there's been warning signs in the past of this, but it's a difficult element. And like the element that's difficult in F1 is they've improved the safety of the cars so much, like in terms of like what the cars can put up with the force. It's almost like the cars are such a good protection of the driver. Like 6 or 7 years ago, Robert Kubica was involved in a crash. I think it was measured he hit the wall at 300 kilometers an hour in his BMW, I think it was in Canada, and got away with a sprained ankle, which was a phenomenal feat, really, of just showing how strong the cars were. But the big problem with Formula One is pretty much most of the drivers now protected by the monocoque they sit in, but the headspace of the helmet is always wide open. Like Felipe Massa suffered a fractured skull 5 years ago when a bit of debris from another car struck him on the helmet at speeds of around 300k again. And Ayrton Senna, the last fatality in Formula One in an actual racing environment, he died not because of like injuries from the actual crash, but from the fact that a piece of debris, I think it was a bit of the side of the front wing, came up and struck his helmet, and that's what gave him the injuries that ended his life. So in that, it is difficult to completely protect the driver, and in this case, it was the head that took the brunt of the impact, and this is what's left Jules in hospital.
Right. The some news that came out today is the Williams deputy principal. She was talking about the possibility of a closed cockpit in Formula One. Now, would that just kind of change everything? Is that a reality? Is that possible?
I think there are difficulties with it, because obviously, having just said, you know, that the head is still the most sort of open area of the body to in Formula One to injury, and the piece that's most likely to suffer permanent damage. obviously, with doing that, you're sort of moving, you're almost, the whole thing about F1 that's called single seater and it's got open cockpit, that's how it's always been. There could be an argument for it if it was doable, but then there's, I know I've heard other experts talk about the problem, and this does happen in Formula One, is if a car gets tipped over, and it's going to be very, very difficult for the driver to get out in that respect. So I think there's pros and cons to it. And I think the danger is making a knee-jerk reaction to what happened to Jules, because Formula One has been remarkably safe over the last few years. And there was a lot of freak elements to this accident, but there are things they can do to prevent it from happening again, or at least minimizing the dangers to the driver if he does lose control in those conditions. So I think at this stage, it's probably a good idea to look at these options, but I think it'll be a long time before they make any kind of decision either way on it.
It's kind of an unfortunate incident that ended the race, but and, you know, we have to look at the standings, and Lewis Hamilton took his third straight checkered flag in Japan, and he was followed by teammate Nico Rosberg, and then Sebastian Vettel was third. Some usual suspects there. So talk about Hamilton winning three in a row, and what is he going to take into the next race?
Well, unquestionably, he's got the momentum now, and Japan was interesting because it was the first time when a Mercedes driver had passed their teammate on track, because Nico had done the better job in qualifying, and in many ways he was unlucky, because I think it would have been a dry race. The way he'd been set up on the Saturday in qualifying, he'd have been very difficult to beat. But as it was, Lewis was he's renowned himself on being great in the wet, and he just seemed to have a better setup, have more confidence in his conditions, and he caught and passed Nico, and he's now 10 points ahead with four races a season left, starting with Russia this weekend. He's got the momentum, and the difficult thing for Nico now is to try and stop that momentum. It's hard to believe, like a month ago after Belgium, when they collided, it was looking very, very, very bad for Lewis, with the gap being 29 points. You're beginning to really worry for him that his championship hopes, so it's getting tricky. But the bonus for Nico is obviously with Abu Dhabi being the first ever double points race in the sport, about 10 points is by no means the end of the world. Like, as long as either driver is within 13 points of each other going into the final race, as long as they win in Abu Dhabi, they would be world champion thanks to double points element. So I think for Nico, this weekend's going to be a bit of a more of an equalised, because no one's ever driven this track before. This is a brand new track in Formula One. So it's going to be an interesting test of who can set up their car first, get the handling. It's got long straights on it. So again, as I think every race is seeing, it should suit the Mercedes. They should be the pace setters. It'll probably help the Williams cars of Bottas and Massa. And it's difficult for the Red Bulls because of the lack of power, the Renault engine, for them to compete. Probably like in the wet in Japan, as you said, Vettel was third. That's probably one of his best performances of the season in terms of raw performance, because in those conditions, you can actually push. Having a lack of engine power doesn't matter so much. It's more about how the cars grip and such. And the Red Bull's got plenty of that. It just lacks horsepower. So it should be another good weekend anyway. But obviously, I think a lot of thoughts. It sounds like a very somber paddock today. And I think lots of thoughts are still with Jules.
I know you mentioned the inaugural Russian Grand Prix is this weekend in Sochi, the same city that hosted the Winter Olympics. And new city, new venue, but the same forecast is predicted. It's going to be some rainy weather, it looks like, again in Russia. But Graham, now that I got you, I'm going to put you on the spot. Who is going to win in Russia on Sunday?
I'm going to go wild on this one and say it has to be Lewis again. I think when it comes to that, in a sort of a circumstance like in the wet, he was fantastic in Japan. And so I believe if it's conditions like that, he probably will have an edge on Nico. And I think for Nico, it's going to be a case of just trying to halt the momentum as best he can and hope for some luck, really. I think at this point, he's really on the ropes. He's had his bad luck as well, obviously, in Singapore when the steering wheel wasn't working properly, which killed his electronics in the car. But I think at this point, it's very difficult to see Lewis not being world champion at the end of the season. And I think another victory in Russia will get him even closer to the objective.
That's all we have time for. Graham Cagle is the Nationals' senior sports editor. This episode was edited by the Nationals' multimedia desk. You can now listen to our podcast by logging on to the Nationals' sport page online. You can also follow our sports coverage on Twitter at SPRT National UAE and the multimedia coverage at NSV UAE. I'm Aaron Gray. Thanks for listening.